This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1pm on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata, over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663 6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Welcome to Cravings. My name is Tad Lombardo, and via satellite, we have Pete Dillon, who is actually located in Noosa from the beach. How are you, Pete?
I'm delightful. Thank you, Tad. It's a glorious day.
Yeah, well, it's not here in Melbourne. It's 17 degrees and overcast. I can hear the waves by you.
Yeah, well, 29 degrees and heading for a top of 33.
Oh, okay. Sounds pretty hot. This is the first time we're doing this on the show, which is exciting. And it's going to be a good show today. Today, we've got in the studio with me somebody who was the inspiration and the brains behind the Om Nom Dessert Bar at the Adelphi Hotel. Spent some time at the Langham Hotel. Has done four seasons of MasterChef, and my friend Christy Tanya. Welcome
Hello.
To the show, Christy.
Hi, Tad. Glad to have to be here. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you. So in the course of today, while we're going to be speaking in-depth to Christy and getting her story and what's up happening next with her, we're also going to be talking about a topic of discussion that made its way into the goodfood.com.au website this week and saying there was a study that was done about Australian menus being too confusing. So we're going to put it out to discuss this a bit further. But first up, Christy, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We go back a bit, don't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, way
when
back.
When we were like little.
Yes, very much so. we actually met when we were on an artisan cart. The Paran Market was going through major renovations.
Yes.
So we were out in the market square in the cold wind rain trying to sell our wares.
Yeah, you were selling like chocolates, and I was selling my desserts that that I made on as a commercial kitchen.
Yeah.
And it was raining. I remember the time it was really cold. Whenever after rained, and yeah, it was like 4 years.
Yeah, it's about 4 years ago. Yeah, you had long hair then. And
yeah, I had long hair then. I don't know why I haven't gone to the crazy.
So did I.
Yeah. And Pete, have you met Christy before?
Hey, Christy, I have indeed. I just wanted Christy to know that in her honour, just before the show,
mm-hmm.
I've had to do a bit of a tasting of a strawberry cheesecake donut.
Oh, really? Have two for me, please.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing.
Well, no, I had a tiny... Pete doesn't eat sugar.
No, that's right. He's not a sweet tooth at all. So that's a big deal.
Okay.
No.
Oh, really? Thank you so much.
Well, it was a quarter of a donut. It wasn't a whole one.
That counts.
That counts.
That counts. Yeah.
The thought counts.
Yeah, some sugar.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes. Not particularly.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so Christy, we also have a bit more in common too, because we had a different career than to what we both do now. you know, your situation was you were with RBM as a consultant, is that right?
Yes, so I started out, I actually graduated from business school, so then I went to IBM. I started as a business consultant and analyst, and I moved up to become project manager over there. And yeah, so it's quite completely different.
And you were the youngest project manager.
I was the youngest female,
Female.
Manager, basically, when I was in Singapore, when I was then. And yeah, but, I don't know what happened. I just dropped everything and I decided to become a chef.
What was it? Was it anything specific, or was it just what was your aha moment?
I've always loved to cook. I've always loved to bake, and I want to create like edible art, basically.
Yeah.
And I always tell people it took my ex-boyfriend to propose to me, my ex-boyfriend for 6 years to propose to me, for me to realize that no, I don't want to do this. And I just like a spur of a moment told my parents that, okay, I'm going to be back in 6 months. I just need to go to France, you know, to put myself out there and see if this is going to work. And I basically fall in love completely with pastry when I was there. And I decided that, okay, this is going to be my calling.
And you're not from Singapore. You're originally from Jakarta.
Yeah, right? I was originally from Indonesia, Jakarta. Yep. Yeah.
And then so you hoofed it over to Paris and slummed it there before you started school?
Slummed it there.
Yeah, is that right?
No, I went to France. When I first came to France, it was not to Paris. So it was like a little town called Isangeux. It was around an hour and a half from Lyon. And I did study there for 6 months. And after that, I moved to Paris. And I worked in Paris for around a year.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's... slumming it up is like, I don't mind slumming it up in Paris anytime. It's really amazing. It's an experience. And
what a place to slum it up.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's kind of like Noosa.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Christy, I just want to take a step back. As you're talking about people that you... you know, you decided to make that career change. And Ted, I think I've asked you this question as well before.
Yep.
I don't know if there's so much an aha moment, but where did the influence come from? Were there people that... you looked to go, hey, this person is making a success out of desserts or chocolate. I can do that. I can think like that. I'm an artist like that. I'm a creative like that. Is there somebody that you, I don't want to say were inspired by, because that's just so twee, but is there somebody that you look to, like a Janice Wong, or is there...
None.
You know,
it's funny.
Who's the person?
The thing is, there was none. Like, for me, the biggest push of why I want to do it is I'm scared of not living my life.
Right.
You know, I was so scared, like, what if I don't... If I don't try this... what am I missing? You know, I don't know. So at that time, I was just thinking that, look, I have skill and I, you know, I was project manager. So worst come to worst, I can always come back to this. But if I don't try this, I owe myself above everyone else to do this. You know, I owe myself the experience. I owe myself the chance. And yeah, not necessarily looking at anyone. I just want to give myself the best shot that I could
But I think, if anything, it was that, you know, I mean, your parents probably weren't too thrilled you were making that change. So it was actually overcoming a lot of that
side of, you know. I was talking to my cousin the other day and I was telling him, I don't know how I did that.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe it's the naivete when you were young. I'm talking young when I was, I was 25. The naivete or something, but I just basically... jump to it, you know, like it's more like I was so scared. That's why when my ex-boyfriend proposed to me, I was so scared, like no, I can't, I need to do something.
Was it a bit of a rebellion, you think? Or a little bit? It's okay if it was.
No, it's probably it's more like, you know, like, okay, the whole entire life I've been good girl, you know, like I went to really good high school, went to really good university, got scholarship over there, went to really good company, you know, to get a really good corporate life. So I was just like feeling that, but there's always something in me that said like, oh, I want to do something else, you know. Like, I don't think that at that time I live in Singapore and I think like, I don't think that I'm supposed to be here.
Right.
I'm supposed to do something else, you know, and I want to learn new language and I just want to see new places, have new friends. And that's exactly what happened to me.
I think a lot of people wouldn't have acted on that though. I think, you know, going through, and even for myself, it was one of those things where I thought, well, I'm either going to do something about it or talk about it the rest of my life, and I didn't want to do that. So, I think it's you know,
the French have an expression for this.
Yep. Ted, what is it?
Non je ne regrette rien. I will have no regrets.
That's it.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important.
Yeah. Are you sure it's the French or the Edith Piaf?
Yeah.
Well, it is Edith Piaf, but she's singing in French, so non je ne regrette rien.
That's all right.
I will have no regrets. Christy, you sort of, there's something you touched on there that we've heard over cravings a number of times previously with people who have left the security of a career in finance or a business or academia or whatever it may be, and taken this leap into the world that we love so much, into this world of hospitality. Mm-hmm. And I hear it, and without wanting to sound like I'm at all racially profiling anybody, I hear it a lot from young Asian people who have gone and studied business, who have gone and sort of, if you will, fulfilled mm-hmm. the ideals mm-hmm. of their parents. Mm-hmm. Sort of created the landing base, if you will, and gone on to do the creative stuff, mm-hmm. been wildly successful, and have never had to go back to that base you've created in the first place. Mm. Is there a lot of pressure on you as a young woman in Asia, and I say this quite broadly without, again, wanting to sound racist, to be successful?
Yes, I mean, like, just... It's in Asia, right? Like you basically, at least I'm speaking for myself, my family, and the people that I know around me, is that you have a path, you know? You go to a really good high school, you go to good college, you get a good degree, and then you go for work for like either financial institutions or big companies. Then you found someone, you got married, you settle down, you have kids, and that's it. You know, like, and that's pretty much the normal way.
How very romantic.
Yeah, but that's a normal way.
It's a family structure that's imposed on you because of the culture,
it is,
isn't it?
Yeah. It is. But, I mean, like, you see a lot of people start to struggle and want to have, like, you know, something different. And that's basically... That's what happened. Yeah, that's what happened to me. And not necessarily my parents was not happy at all, obviously. But now they've seen that, oh, I could make a living out of myself, could make something out of myself. And they start to open up to the idea and tell my cousins that, you know what? Not everything needs to be suit and tie. You might be on a chef jacket eventually.
But I'm sure they're really proud of you now. I mean, you've done... what you've done in, you know, four seasons of MasterChef and going back to Indonesia and doing a bit of that as well.
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, like, do you do that to make your parents proud? I was like, no, that to...
It's a byproduct, isn't it?
It's a byproduct. Yeah. I do that to make myself happy, to make myself, like, know that, oh, I haven't, like, missing out anything. So the FOMO is real.
Yeah, definitely.
Missing out is real.
Yeah, that's
and
for
Christy,
sure.
We'll probably touch on this after. I know we've got to go to a short break in a second, mm-hmm. but... Yep. I want you to think about, because I'll give you a question on notice if I might, think about how we talk about MasterChef as a phenomena, mm-hmm. and we've spoken to many people who've sort of been in and out of that studio where you're sitting, mm-hmm. Who have told me quite bluntly that MasterChef changed the direction mm-hmm. of their business enormously. I remember talking to Ben Williamson from Jared's in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. He appeared on MasterChef, and for the next 6 weeks, you could not get a seat in his restaurant on any day of the week because the populace decided they wanted to go and see what the fuss was about. You know, like you, he's gorgeous to look at. But I want to sort of touch on this when we come back about that, the phenomena of television and how it's changed the way we sort of think about our projectile as far as career and the success of our business, how it can become more successful with the likes of MasterChef.
Yeah, sure.
Yep, so we'll take a break and hear some community service announcements, and we'll be back shortly.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings. It is 14 minutes past one. And just before we get going to the answer to the question mm-hmm. Christy's going to go, we can, if you have any questions for Christy during the broadcast today, you can SMS us on 0427-569-949, or you can email us on onair@joy.org.au. And again, I'm in the studio here in Melbourne. Pete's on the beach in Noosa.
If only you could see me. I'm sitting on the beach. Hey, people can also tweet to our program, Cravings Joy 949, because I can see those tweets too. Mm-hmm. Christy, before we go to that MasterChef phenomenon, there's another question I had for you. Mm-hmm. We've spoken to a lot of people over the last couple of years who have made a move into desserts, and we've seen the likes of or the success of people like Darren Purchase of Virgin Purchase, who is wildly successful and a very good friend of our program. Adriano Zumbo. We saw the success of Reynolds, and a compatriot of yours from MasterChef. Yourself and Apollivu. There's this sort of this big switch to dessert being very much an integral component of food, and almost in some senses taking over. Like we're seeing a 16-year-old kid in Melbourne open a donut shop with syringes of you know, beautiful stuff hanging out of his donuts. There's this massive shift toward dessert, and for somebody who doesn't really eat dessert, I wonder if you might explain to me how this has happened.
Well, I think it's because, you know, you eat with your eyes first, you know, and then they go to the, not even only here in Melbourne, but even overall when I was in France and everything, is that the people start to see dessert more and more as an art, and they try to find, like, you know, more original and kind of like really sort of interesting way to decorate it with edible stuff, with the chocolate. You know, the chocolate now is like it's a medium to just not just to eat, but also to decorate, and you need a lot of skill to do that. A lot of skill, definitely. Ted, we can tell you more about that one. But so it goes to become, in the end, also amongst us pastry chefs, we want to push ourselves to look, to make things look better, to make things taste better, and I guess that's caught on to the to people, you know, like to have something that is very Instagrammable, something that, that they can take picture and share to people, you know, and having that factor of thinking, how do they do this, you know, like how do they do this thing that looks like rose and it's edible and it looks so real, but it's made out of chocolate. So that intriguing factor, I think, brought people up and bring the interest up to pastry.
I think it's also a nice a nice fusion of the food and the art of it as well. I think that's a big part of the whole technical basis for it, and then the art comes through and the interpretation and the expression of the chef as an artist, in a way.
It's also getting the lines getting blurred right now from savory and dessert. Like I use a lot of items that are not necessarily common for dessert, you know, like avocado and things like that, and be part of it. And we're becoming a lot more experimental, and people now also get more and more willing to try something new. You know, like and that's why I think it's just get people to now not just like, oh, this is dessert, this is savory, but it's basically culinary art in general for those two aspects, is how I see it.
And I guess we've also seen that in over time. I remember when we first started putting a little bit of honey on a plate with some blue cheese.
That's
people
right.
I thought we were bonkers.
Yeah, I love it.
Because there's that sort of salty, then sweet. Yeah. And as it's continued, you know, the salted caramel that everybody is putting onto pretty much everything. You know, a steak with salted caramel butter, lovely. You know, people are going over the top with salted caramel, and I think I'm sure it's going to be like quinoa and kale and just fade away at some point. But I'm curious as to how much you are driven by, dare I say, fads or trend, particularly for the two of you, with what and salted caramel is a really good example here. How much you're driven by trends? So if there was, if the next thing was, you know, licorice and prawn powder, how would you be able to integrate that into what you both do?
I'll answer just quickly. I wouldn't, because I don't like it. Like, that's the way I work it. If I like it, I'll do it. I mean, you mentioned salted caramel, and I think, you know, it's been around for a long time now, as a trend. So maybe it's not a trend. I hope it stays, because I like it, and I'll always do it. And it's one of the biggest sellers that I have in my shop, in its various forms. But I think, from my own point of view, if I don't personally like it, I'm not going to do it. And I also try to be more of an innovator, as somebody that follows a trend too. I think it's important to try to do that from that perspective. Wouldn't you agree, Christy?
Yeah. I never. Well, one thing I remember, a journalist asked me, like, what advice can I give to the young chefs nowadays? And my advice would be like, you try everything.
Yeah.
You know, like you, but doesn't necessarily mean that you follow that. You know, like if there's a trend, I would like to try, but that's not necessarily my style or what I would like to do.
Yeah.
What happened is that I know where I come from. I know what kind of flavor that goes with me. I know what I like. And when there is some kind of like new trends, I will see, does it fit into what my style is? If it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, you don't really have to force yourself just because the industry is dictating that way. Like, for example, fairy floss, you know, like, yeah, right now there's a lot of fairy floss around. It's just not in my philosophy. I don't, yeah, agree with that, you know. Yeah. Like, so I wouldn't have that,
that's,
you know,
nasty,
in my I wouldn't have that in my, yeah, in my dessert. So, but a lot of people like it, or like,
yeah,
you know, like, let's say popcorn, you know, like,
that's,
and
right,
put it in like a dessert, and I'm, ooh, just like, no, because popcorn's gonna get soggy. I like the taste, but I don't like to mix it with something else,
yeah,
you know. So
I think,
yeah,
too, the clever, whether it's a savory chef or a pastry chef, a, mm, clever person will recognize a trend but then tweak it to their own,
yeah,
style. And I think,
yeah,
there's a little bit difference there,
yes,
as well,
yes,
a point,
exactly,
of difference. So yeah, I think but there's nothing worse than seeing somebody just doing something because it's, you know,
trend.
It was a trend of 2017,
yes,
and,
yes,
you know, just,
so
jumping,
hello,
on that bandwagon. Yeah.
now, also, I know I asked before, was there somebody who inspired you to take the jump out of project, mm, management and the world of business?
Mm.
So now that you're doing what you're doing, is there a Johnny Uzzini or a Janice Wong?
No,
or a... you know, I was talking to Ted. We spoke to Wiley DeFresne,
yes,
a few weeks ago,
we did,
who was, you know, one of New York's best chefs, and he's opening a donut shop in Williamsburg in Brooklyn.
Yep.
So, I whilst I want to move away from trend, are there people that inspire you in some way? Not necessarily, you know, that you want to emulate or follow a career path, but.
Hmm.
The beauty of what Janice Wong does, and I just want to talk about the art on a plate for a minute. Her food is so beautiful to look at, which is, Christy, it's not unlike what you do, it's not unlike what Anna does in Sydney. There is this sort of, it is art, and it is edible art. Do you look to others? Do you jump on the net and sort of see what other people are doing at least?
No, like, look, Janice has her own style. Mm. I have my own style. Anna, mm, has her own style, you know, like we, mm, all, and like I said, doesn't necessarily mean because like, oh, she's successful doing that, that I would do what she's doing. So that's first and foremost. So I don't. But if I'm looking for like inspirations, obviously, like, you know, like any other players in different industry, they have to always keep abreast of what is the trend, of what is, like, you know, what other people are doing, just to know, you know, at the know a level. So I was trained in France, right? And I was basically initially trained as a restaurant chef, so plated dessert and things like that. So I'm very inspired by French style. So,
yeah,
having said that, we're looking about like Claire Zler. So, for example, she is this tiny little woman, was like the head pastry chef for La Serre, the Three Michelin restaurant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then now she's the director of creations for La Durée. She's one of the people that I really like to see what just doing, you know. Emmanuel Rion, you know, it was like one of the head pastry chef.
Your
for
French
Pushkin.
Is awesome.
Lived in France.
She's lived there for a while.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so Eddie Banganum, which is like doing now in the Versailles, you know, the palace.
Thomas.
So,
mm,
yeah, so I was actually quite a lot influenced, and I'm really driven by those people in France because when I come here, it's quite a culture shock, and I also have to adjust to of my style and trying to find a grabbing of where do I stand in this industry in Australia, because like French people, right? Like they will find one item, for example, let's say choux pastry, okay, and the filling. They will do that, and they will practice till I God knows how many times to find the best of that thing. So they're quite simple items, just one item on a plate. You can have one, two, three items on a plate, but they are very structural. You know, they're very structural. There's not much of deconstructed, and they are paying a lot of attention to technique instead,
yeah,
of like the plating. So, and that when I first came here and I got introduced to like the deconstructed plating,
yes,
I was like, what the, you know? So, but I got to,
yeah,
learn.
Sorry, but build it for me. That's yeah. your job.
Yeah,
my job is the eating bit. That's what I'm paying for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we got to. I got to adapt. I got to learn. You know, like I got to find how am I going to basically find my standing. You know, like doing what I love and what I believe and what I train in, but still cater to the what people here are used to and interested in.
And also, the ingredients that are available here are different than what's available in France, and so you kind of have to work that into it
too. In terms of ingredients, I love Australian ingredients. Yeah. I love the native ingredients. I think it's our job as well as chefs to introduce to the people in Australia that, hey, you know, on your backyards, in your country, that there's some amazing produce that probably you could never get in any other countries, in another place.
That's right. But even you know, the dairy products are different than they are in France. Yeah. The butter, the cream, you know, all that stuff. And that flows through the end product, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
So you had to sort of tweak those things that you probably learned in France and to adjust them to our local conditions, if that's the right.
Yeah. And again, Ted, this is something that we hear a lot.
Yeah.
Cravings will be back shortly, so don't go too far. But if you do miss anything, you'll hear it on the Cravings Podcast at joy.org.au/cravings via iTunes or your favourite podcast site. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspagatata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Manny Fellel and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings. It's 28 minutes past one, still only 17 degrees in Melbourne and
29 and a half degrees here.
I need to kick that in.
Hey, we need to start changing those announcements.
I know,
too,
we will.
It's all about Pete. We have to start to get Christy to record one when she's finished there today.
Yes, we will.
Hey, Christy, I want to jump back to that question I put on notice before about the MasterChef phenomenon. I'm going to kind of phrase it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised by your success from when you first created Om Nom at the Adelphi and MasterChef came a knocking? Mm-hmm. And to where you are now with you know, Tad's introduced before, all of that that experience and management experience and stuff that you've had in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised by your success is the part A of the question. And then I guess part B is how much did MasterChef help put you on the map?
Well, surprised, yes. I guess, like, you know, I never really planned to be that known, you know what I mean? Like when I first got the job in Adelphi and then at Om Nom and we opened Om Nom and then the producer asked me, do you want to be in one of the episodes? In my head, it was just going to be 15 minutes of fame, right? So I just said whatever I need. I had a blast. So I was really enjoying the time that I did my first episode. So I was just like, had a blast. You know, I remember that I just said whatever I need to say. Then that definitely mostly censored. And I remember that George looking to the producer and went like, where did you find this girl? Like, she can come back. Like, you know, like she's just fun. And so that's basically the beginning of it, you know. So I didn't know that I'm going to be kept called back on every season and be known as, I don't know, the crazy woman who put up like crazy challenges as well. But
I have to say, though, when they referred to you as the mean pastry, I didn't agree with that for a second.
They were saying like the smiling assassin or something like that. I was laughing.
Yeah, I know, but it was just sort of inaccurate, I thought.
No, but they make you go in, like, it's a way that we all have our shoes to fill in. We have our own character to fill in.
I know, but just knowing you, I know that.
Yeah,
you're not a mean
we have
person,
our own shoes to fill in, but but I do and also take pastry seriously, so that's why. In terms of the business, I also still remember the first time that the episode was released. I came to work and then my head bartender Carl, he told me like I had to plug off the phone.
Right.
Is it like, I'm sorry, I can't deal. Like, it's I had to plug off the phone. It just didn't stop ringing, you know? So I was like, of course, it's really great for the business. Yeah. It's really great. It's really great marketing. It puts us on a map. It makes people think like, oh, who is this person? We've never seen this person. And we, at that time, the concept of what we did at Om Nom Dessert Bar was new. You know, it's like we focused just on dessert. Yeah. We had, we did a lot of trial and error to get the right balance between the dessert and the savory, which is like, was like a tapas style. So, when I was still there, you know, like, and it just put us on a map. It put like both the business and myself as professional on a map. It was, I'm forever grateful for that.
Yeah, which is great. I think it's and again, it leads to a future that you can pretty much write your own story to, and in a way, and it
make my story hurt.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. Definitely.
If I can help,
it's exposure,
like what Pete was saying, if I can help a few people to just get out there and do, like, you know, just give a shot for what you want, for what you dream of. I think it's, I find that it's a pretty good risk. To pretty good life living, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you've got a few things coming up in the works that I want to talk about. Some exciting things happening.
Yeah, so starting my own business.
Which is great.
So we're starting our own business. Yay! So hopefully, yes, finally, yes. You know, like...
Cue the applause button.
Yes.
Do you eat ice cream, Pete?
You know, I do, and I have to make a confession that one of my favourite ice creams comes from a little mob in Victoria, Gundowring.
Mm-hmm.
And they make this most beautiful licorice ice cream.
Ah, okay.
That's on trend, isn't
it? That's on trend.
Yeah.
Licorice is on
and
trend.
And they've been making this for about 4 or 5 years, and at one point, I swear, they're making salted licorice ice cream, which just made me so happy.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking, like, okay, there's definitely ice cream makes people happy. Ice cream makes people, like, you know, if you don't like ice cream, I don't trust you as a person. Let's say that.
You know,
like,
it's fair enough.
So,
if you don't drink, I don't like it.
And so I have that in a pipeline. So hopefully by July, you can hear something else, something more from me, you know, like the shops where it is going to be, it's going to be accessible. And
well,
it's sort
again,
of...
Christy, we're seeing, Peter Pippo have done this, Messina have done this, Johnny Di Francesco, who's known for pizza, has now got his own gelateria. So is it along the same vein, or are we getting a little more clever?
Not really. So, I mean, like, okay. I'm not just doing gelateria, you know, I'm trying to make a new breed of pastry shop, you know, like, so
excellent.
I'm trying to make, like, I love eclair, for example. Like, I don't know why the people call me the shoe queen. Like, I love eclair.
Yeah.
And
they call me a shoe queen, but I think for entirely different reasons.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, like, I like to combine that, you know. I like to say I like things that I like to eat, you know, like I like eclair, I like ice cream. Like, let's combine them together. I like macaroni,
I'll
like
I'll give
let's
you a
combine
challenge.
Them together.
It's
yes,
a challenge.
I love challenge.
Good. A delicious version of, you know, there's a thing called a golden gay time.
They've done that.
Yeah.
Which should be, yeah, no, I want you to create something that is based on the Golden Gay Time.
I would,
My
I
challenge
would.
To you.
I would. Yeah. Like, I like to have those kind of flavor, you know, that is, like, not artificial. Something that you're using fresh produce and what you can get in Australia. Like, for example, you're talking about licorice, right? And in France, it's a challenge. Like, it's actually a real challenge that in one of the Meilleur of France, which is the best of France, the competitions, they make them. You need to make licorice from scratch, and having no essence and everything. You know, like, like try to do that.
Wow.
And so this guy who won Meilleur, he said that so he took Coca-Cola and he took aniseed.
Yeah.
And he made licorice. So I think it's like things like that, you know, it's smart where you actually tell, like, okay, I'm not going to use essence, I'm not going to use premixes and things like that. So but I want to have this flavor. So that's how we can give our customers the best flavor possible with less, you know, chemical that you can find.
Well, Ted, I think that probably brings us to the next. Almost to the, it's a nice logical segue to the next part of the program where
definitely
you wanted to reference the article in Good Food, about whether menus are getting confusing. And we've been sitting here this week writing a menu and trying to work out things that are going on to our menu here in our business. that that won't confuse 98% of the public.
Yeah, I'll just read the quote from the actual article. It was a study that was done by Galaxy Research for the online booking site OpenTable, and it found 83% of Australians feel restaurant menus are more confusing than they need to be. Of the 1,265 respondents surveyed across Australia, 74% said they have had to ask a waiter or waitress to explain a menu item when dining at a cafe or restaurant. Personally, I don't feel that's a problem. If somebody's going to get an education,
I guess it can be. If there is something on your menu that is the egg of a turtle dove, and
right.
you give it the name of a...
That's right.
You know, you find some weird name that existed in 1620 that used to grace the table of King Charles III, there's going to be some questions.
I totally agree with that. And I think... And I guess it also depends on the intent of that menu item as well. Is it like, for example, the articles, you know, someone trying to be chefy for ego's sake, or, you know, or is it somebody trying to have an edge? Because, I mean, in Melbourne, the competition is so great. You know, a lot of people try to have an edge that way. I think, I mean, I can see both sides of the story.
Yes.
You know, because some of the things that, you know, they'll put words on there that you yes. literally need to, you know,
You have to carry a dictionary.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I do think...
Or the LaRousse.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Carry the LaRousse in your pocket.
Exactly.
But do you think it's getting to the point where we are
I'm a very big advocate of educating our customers of the food, of, like, what we're using. So, on one hand, I don't like someone to drop a food, like what you said, to drop something on a table. It's like, oh, in front of you, we have a turtle egg, you know, the egg of turtle doves, and we cook it at like sous vide 58 degree, but you're not actually explaining
blah, blah, blah.
That.
I just eat the bloody egg.
Exactly. So, but as another hand, I really encourage people to just go like, oh, beautiful, lovely. Like, no, actually ask, like, oh, what is this? You know, how do you cook it? And how did you get it? You know, like a lot. I went to dinner with Tat not a long time ago, and we were talking about like heirloom, let's say.
Yes.
You know, like when someone dropped in front of me, it's like, oh, this is our heirloom tomato. And I went, where did you get it from? And who like, you know, who grew it and things like that. Like, you can't call
Frank,
something
our supplier.
And came from the back
Which
of like a truck
yeah,
in
right.
the Brighton
right, yeah,
box.
Great.
So that's the heirloom. Yeah. But you can't call it heirloom without knowing actually the history of the things, you know. So that's
we've got there's a whole bunch of wank words, and I know they use them in business.
Oh, I do.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be vulgar, but you know, artisanal and handcrafted and housemade.
Yes.
And, you know, It's almost getting there's another word, there's not a French word, but people are becoming too verbose,
yes,
and using four words as a descriptor where you could use one
yes,
word.
True.
It's a beautiful tomato salad. Let the tomatoes in your mouth on your palate speak for themselves.
Yeah. Mm.
Don't tell me that the heirloom tomatoes that were hand harvested at midnight by nubile virgins in the back of Birragara, because I don't give a shit. Really, I just want to eat the tomato salad because it looks and tastes beautiful.
No, but that's you though. I would, like, I would give a damn, you know, like I would actually would want to know, like, where is the some people would like to know of where it's from, but I mean, what I'm against is just saying it, not actually understanding it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm.
Yeah.
So there's no purpose, you know. Like if that tomato that's in front of you, because it's getting picked at 12 midnight by a certain tribe, adds the flavor to the tomato, by all means, I would like to know. But if
it
doesn't,
I would doubt it very much.
Yeah. But if it doesn't, then let it go. You know. Like, so there's a lot of things. So it's like I believe, like, in, for example, in Attica, you know, like they just have like this one simple dish in front of you, and they know the history of where is the kangaroo farm, or, like, you know, what is the herbs that we're using and everything. And that's the level of education that I think is good.
And I understand the need for the explanation of provenance.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
For example, these ducks are from the Wimmera, or these tomato, you know, these quail have come from Bort. I get that, and I get. I think provenance and sharing the story of food and the provenance of food by putting, you know, up here there are Noosa red tomatoes and there's beautiful pork from Gympie. Yeah, use that. That's
sure.
great. Mm. But then when you start talking about it being a rare breed pork that's, you know, blah blah blah, it becomes. And I actually think this article has totally hit the nail on the head. We've got to take ourselves out of the equation, because we're clever. We're yes. chefs. We study this. We know this language. We talk in this language to our colleagues and our mates when we go and have a beer. When our customers go and have a beer, they're talking about the scores in the football and how pissed they were last Friday night drinking this particular beer. So I sort of, we've got to meet somewhere in the middle, and I understand why the public, and I don't want to use the public as a disparaging term, but our customers, our consumers, aren't as interested in some of these quite chefy, clever things as we are.
But I have to, there's another perspective to that I see on another form, okay? So when we're trying to be clever, sometimes we don't get our message across. And when we have, like, let's say desserts, because I'm desserts, right? So in one plate, sometimes you have 13, 14 different components, which will be fun if you're in MasterChef for a challenge. Yeah. But like on a, in a real life, you're going to be like, what did I just eat? You know, there's a lot of times that, what did I just eat? You know, like I got lost. Yeah. Texture-wise, not necessarily have to be there. Like you were mentioning Janice, for example, right? So Janice is known for that.
Well, like she loves an ingredient.
She has so many different things on her plate. And that's nothing, I don't have anything against that. You know, like it's just not my style. And because I explained just now, like my style is very French and Lucy is just a little bit different. But I remember that she was like saying, oh, she would keep, one of her plate has like fruit leather. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, you know, no, sorry, lavender leather. So I was like, I want to know what is this lavender leather. And it came out in front of me, and it's a string. I'm not joking. So in the whole dish, that was like a string. That's basically like a lavender jelly that they cut really thin. So and it get into my questions like, oh, how significant does this make my dish?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the complicated another perspective for me. They put
lavender gel.
That's
they're throwing on components, but how significant this will bring up my dish.
Yeah, so like it's if just that like, dish, if that wasn't on the dish, did it matter?
Yes, exactly.
And I think for her palate, it probably would. And I think if you look at some of those things that Darren constructs, Darren purchased with 14 different layers, and every one of those layers works seamlessly together. Yes. Ted, I know you're telling me to shut up because we need to take a break.
Yeah.
They do work seamlessly together. And I think if you take one component out, Darren would notice that. Kathy would notice that.
Yes.
I might not, or the consumer might not. But I think it's all about finding that perfect balance as you're creating something.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Welcome back to Cravings. You are with Pete and Ted. It's 1:45, and we have Christy Tanya in the studio with us. Before we get going, I just want to say a big thank you to Michael for helping me out with the paneling. He's doing a great job, and
he's a good guy. Yeah. Hey, but Ted, I've got some news for you.
Oh, what?
I'll be back next week to do the paneling for you. How's that sound?
Really? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Now I've got to be back in Melbourne for an event on Sunday, so I'm going to make sure I'm in on Saturday, and we can play in this studio together.
That's like old times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll look forward to that. Just before the last break, we had a bit of a heated debate, I think, about
was
the
it?
The
it was
no,
it was,
no,
it
they're
was
not heated about no, it. Very civilized. You want heated? We've got 15 minutes to go, right?
Yeah, we do. Let's do it. I'll just read another bit of the research that came out of that report. It said that the research also showed that 40% of Australians have felt too embarrassed to ask a waiter or waitress to explain an item on the menu. I don't really get that. I think, you know, if you're paying good money for something and you have a question, you should be able to ask. No, there's no stupid questions. I mean, but I think that's 40%. That's pretty high. But I guess when it's being clogged with a lot of this jargon, people don't want to feel like they're ignorant, I think.
No, I think it's a bit... Okay. I feel like this, okay? When you're paying a certain amount of money, right? You are automatically into this league of foodie.
Yes.
You know, because normal people will think like, I wouldn't pay $400 for like this many course meal. We would, you know, like, and because of that, when you do that, they think that, oh, I'm in this automatically welcome to this league of people. Right. So when that happened, and if they ask those questions, it makes them feel like they are stupid to ask those questions and they are not worthy to be in that. Like, meanwhile, I was like, not all of us know.
That's
all
right.
All of those things. So, I mean, they're sort of scared of feeling like, you know...
foolish. Yeah.
Stupid, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christy, I'm going to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's about feeling stupid. I think there is, I think people are intimidated. And, you know, the people yeah. who are wealthy yeah. enough to go yeah. and pay $400 and $500 and $600
yeah.
$700 for a 14-course degustation, they want to do that because they can, I think, is part A of this thing.
Yes.
But by the same token, I don't think they may be as sophisticated or as knowledgeable as we would like them to be. And it goes back to the comment I made before about, you know, we have these discussions amongst us.
Yes.
Because we know what these things are that we're going to find on a plate.
Yeah.
The consumer may well be able to afford, and there's a lot of people earning a lot of money, may well be able to afford to go and have a 16-course or a 12-course degustation at Dinner by Heston or Vue du Monde or Attica, that we'll have to ask. Look, I'm really sorry, but I don't know what Angelica is, or I don't know what this is or that is. So I think there is a sense of we can't dumb down our menus. Certainly not that.
No,
level,
not
that
not to dumb
level.
Down the menu, but I do.
No,
I agree with you. Also saying like it's quite intimidating as well for them. You know, like the environment with like you know the butler next to you is probably wearing a suit that is quite more expensive than your suit. You know, sometimes it feels just quite intimidating. You know, too.
But do you know what? I want to put another. Sorry, Pete.
Sorry, Ted. I was just going to say. I think we see it in wine as well, where you go and you sit down, and probably more so in wine. You sit down in a restaurant and you think, oh my God, I don't even know what a Grüneveld Leaner is or whether I should order it. And will I look like a twit if I say to my waiter, I say to my sommelier or the person looking after my table, look, I'm really sorry, but what's a Grüneveld Leaner?
Because they may be
something that they would recommend. You've ordered a particular dish and they would say, you know, can we help you with the wine? There's a Grüneveld Leaner that would be beautiful with that. And you don't want to look at them like, are you speaking German to me?
Yeah.
Or what? So I think it's very. If I asked both of you, have you drank a Saparavi, and could you tell me what a Saparavi is like?
Yeah.
But you know, you're going to look at me a bit odd.
Yeah, but another side to it, like from my own personal perspective, is that when I am going to a restaurant that's you know quite well known, and I'm going to go to experience the chef's menu, so I'm going to put my trust in the chef. I don't really care what the menu says.
Yeah.
As long as I don't have any allergies or anything like that, it's not a worry to me. So I want to go. Like we've done this when we've gone out to other restaurants, Christy, and we just like just give us whatever you want,
and we're
happy for that.
That's cool.
So
that's
I don't care what it's.
And as they bring each dish, this is some Tasmanian scallops. And we've seared them and we've sliced them like a carpaccio, and we put them on a cauliflower puree. Congratulations, they taste delicious.
It's a discovery.
That I get, but I think there is a certain part of our industry, and I'm not casting nasturtiums anywhere, but there is a certain part of our industry that would love to complicate that.
Yeah.
It's more about their ego than our own.
Yes, you're right.
First of all, and I think that's the same thing with wine. I want a waiter to say, you know what, we've got a Grüneveld Leaner that goes with this dish. If you haven't had a Grüneveld Leaner, it's from the northern part of Austria. It has, you know, some celery and white pepper characteristics, and the match would be beautiful.
Yes.
That's what I want to hear.
But it's funny also, like, I coming from experience, because even I'm in this industry, doesn't necessarily mean I know a lot of things. You know, like, there are a few things that, you know, things that I don't know. Yeah. We're still learning. So that's the same with wine, like what you said, you know? Like, sometimes, you know, when they open the wine and they said, oh, do you want to try a sip? And I'm like, well, I don't know if this is going to be good or bad. Can you just give me a straw or something? You know, like it's...
you will know, because if it smells like old socks or rotten mushrooms...
No, but what about if they said, like, this is how it's supposed to smell like? And you're like, okay.
Well, you know what?
Like dead mouse or something.
It doesn't appeal to my... No, well, no, that's when... Wine should never taste like a dead mouse or old
shoe. I know.
If it does, it's either corked or it's been badly treated.
Exactly.
You should be able to taste grapes and grape juice. And whether it's... a cherry flavor, a blackberry flavor, whatever. It might be zesty and limey. It's got to taste fresh in your mouth, whatever it is, even if it's 40 years old. I had a bottle of Grange not long ago. I was at a tasting, and I don't want to sound like a wanker, but it was a 40-year-old Grange Hermitage from 1976.
Right.
And they opened it, and they poured it, and they asked me would I like to taste it, like look at it, and I said, I don't even want to taste it because the color of it... It's dead. There's no life in that wine because it seriously looks like brown water, and that's what a Grange will go like when it's done. Any of those big reds, it won't be clear.
Right.
It won't be that beautiful purpley color, whichever range of purple you want to use. This looked like it wasn't clear. It was a little opaque, and it was brown. I knew. I didn't even have to smell it because I looked at it and went, nah. And then when I tasted it, I said to the guy, that smells like my sister's worm farm.
Ah.
And so it did. So I think that's why they pour you a little taste and a smell. So even when you look at the wine first, if it's not bright and clear and transparent, and if it doesn't look like wine, it should look. If it looks like Nana's urine sample because she's got an infection, then
if it's fine but you just don't like the taste?
Well, then
can you return it?
You can. If a familiar has brought that to the table and said, you know, we think this would go nicely, and you go, okay, give me a bash, and he pours it, and the colour's beautiful, and then you have a smell, and you think, mmm. And then you taste it, and it's like, oh, I really don't want to drink that. I find this, a lot of the orange wines, these new sort of... these wines that are a little biodynamic, bloody, blah, 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 blah. I actually find that they taste like old shoes, and I don't care for them.
No.
This is a personal thing, but I was with somebody one night. I went to Bell's Chicken Shop. She said, oh, my God, you have to have this Chardonnay. It is amazing. And I tasted it, and I went, God, that tastes like shit. How do I explain how bad this wine is on my own palate?
I'd like to meet the person who actually associated a dead mouse flavor with the wine. Like, how does anyone know what a dead mouse tastes like?
Well, Pete knows.
I would hit them with the back of a shovel. Okay. And it's like there are other terms, Tad, that I use with wine that I hate.
Right.
Oh, this has got a lovely struck match flavor about it. There are two places you strike a match. You've left the smell in the bathroom. The other is when you're lighting the fire. If your wine smells that flinty, and that sulfuric, it's not good. The other, this has got, it's got that lovely sort of barnyard aroma. And it's like, because on the bottom of the barnyard, you're going to find a couple of things. You're going to find rotten straw, and you're going to find shit.
Yes.
So if my wine is smelling like rotten straw and shit,
get your money back.
There's a fairly significant problem with that wine. So barnyard and struck match are up there with dead mouse.
Yeah, I'm glad, because it's just,
ghastly. Wine should taste like wine. It should be. You know, one of my friends says to me, oh, gosh, I've always got these descriptors for wine. And it's like, that's my palate. I quite often will find that this particular white has a lovely sort of sherbet flavor to it. Because that's what it does on my palate. On your palate, that might just taste like lemon juice. Or it might just taste like some ripe grapes.
That's right.
So I think, food is the same. I know we've got to go to a break.
Yeah, we do have to go.
Food is the same. We've got to find the same... the things that make our palates happy.
That's
that
right.
If there is no orgasm of the tongue, there is no point.
That's right. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back shortly.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Cravings with Pete and Tad. We have Christy Tanya in the studio with us today, and Pete's up in Noosa. It is 4 minutes to 2.
Hey, Tad, have we heard from Linda yet?
No, we haven't, actually. Not this time. She's actually hasn't emailed since you haven't been here, Pete. I don't know.
I'll be having a stern word with her on air next week.
Christy's looking like, who's Linda? Linda's my mother. She usually listens from New Jersey, so,
Hey, Tad, do we know what we've got coming up next week?
It's not 100% confirmed yet, so I'll keep that under my hat, but as soon as I do know, I will put it out on Twitter.
Excellent,
But something is coming up.
I will be in the studio with you next week.
Yes, looking forward to that. It's going to be fun.
Hey, Christy, really good to talk to you, and continued success, my dear. I'm sure that your new ice cream venture will be magnificent.
Thank you so much.
It will be. And also, we're going to see you at a couple of things happening up before that. You're going to be part of the Wicked Chocolate celebration at the Paran Market in May. So we'll see a bit of a preview of what you're doing, hopefully, in the shop. And
a few things. I'm going to be doing a few things in Sydney as well.
Yep.
And then a few things in Melbourne too. So, and you'll see me somewhere on your TV sometime.
Pretty soon.
Let us know when you're coming to Queensland.
Oh,
and you can come up and do a little thing in our little shop up here.
Oh, I love to go to Noosa.
We'll have a little Christy Tanya dessert.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
And I promise I won't make it complicated.
That's good, because no less than 25 ingredients. There is no room for complications.
one of those complicated 25 ingredient things, and
like I said, if it's MasterChef, I can understand, it has a challenge value, but that's also another aspect of being complicated, the business value, like making things more complicated. Is it like it's up my food cost, but it's and also more of labor cost.
Yeah.
It's more on labor cost, like your prep prep time and everything. So you need to, as a business person, because we're not just chef, right? We're also business people.
You have to be, yeah.
So we have to calculate, is it worth it to go down that road? You know, like in my head, of course, if I throw this, like I'm using Pete's word here, like I'm throwing a lot of wankers on it. Is it like, of course, it's going to be really cool, but is it going to be like, you know, is it going to be efficient?
I'm glad I had an influence today.
Yes. Yeah.
Good to talk to you both. I'll be back next week, Ted.
Yes, you will, and I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you.
It's going
to
be
good to talk to you, Christy.
See you soon, Pete.
You will when you come to Noosa.
Of course, I will.
In my shop.
Now I got the official invitation, so I will.
Yeah, beautiful.
She might bring her bags and stay. You never know. You've got to be careful.
Well, if there's plenty of room in our house.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a lot of exciting things happening for you coming up in the future, and it's kind of nice to be at this point of it. While it's probably a little bit scary for you,
at the same time,
ride it, because you know once you get that shop open, it's crazy.
Like I said, like it's funny because when I was younger, and I have to jump everything, you know, it's scary. Now it's scary number two, so it's okay.
But that's all good.
If I could do it back then, I could do it now.
Embrace the scary.
Absolutely. Feel the fear and do it anyway, as they say.
Indeed.
But thank you for joining us in the studio today, Christy.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
Michael, thank you for your help on the panel. I really appreciate that. And, coming up next is the Escape Pod. And there's going to be a lot of discussion happening on a few different topics happening there. And it's going to be great. So have a great day, and we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening to another Cravings podcast with Pete Dillon, online at joy.org.au/cravings and live Saturdays from 1 p.m. on Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Exploring all that's finest in food and beverage across Melbourne and Victoria. Sponsored by La Spaghettata. Over 35 years of food, family and fun at 238 Lygon Street, Carlton. Wine and dine with La Spaghettata for an authentic Italian experience. Pasta, wine, seafood, steak and so much more. Dine in and enjoy the authentic sights and sounds of Lygon Street. Or order takeaway now via Deliveroo, Uber Eats or Foodora. Eat, drink, love with La Spaghettata. Call 9663-6102. Visit laspaghettata.com.au or find them on Facebook.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.